knees, see some hands in the air on this one. Everybody come, yeah. So come on, take a bow, shake it up, break it up, pour some sugar on me.
I come from big rock and roll shows, so my designs are usually very rock and roll based. I don't think that cultural differences are good or bad. They just are. You know, they exist, and I think it is important to realize that.
Hi, this is Jeff Hanna, your host for the Global Exhibitor Podcast. Ignacio Rosenberg, known as Iggy to his friends and clients, is a well-known lighting and visual designer who works for a distinctive global agency called Lightswitch. He grew up in Buenos Aires, Argentina, but he is based in Chicago now and has spent more than 20 years designing and implementing large touring shows around the world for rock bands such as Def Leppard, Janet Jackson, The Rolling Stones, Shakira, and many others. Iggy is really a neat guy, extremely brilliant as a designer. He's sophisticated, articulate, but he's really down to earth. Iggy spends time working with people that most of us will never get the chance to meet. I believe this gives Iggy a unique perspective as a designer working on large scale and high profile projects, but also a global perspective working across cultures around the world. Iggy recently spent the better part of a day with me and our creative team at Exhibit Concepts in Ohio, sharing his knowledge and inspiration. During this interview, we talked about design, culture, lighting, creating experiences, and much more. I wanted to understand how Iggy's experience working with these large rock groups has helped him as he does corporate work around the world. I found it really insightful, and I hope you do as well.
No. I mean, some things are key. If you're touring with a show, it's hard to change it for a certain audience unless you have the lead time to do it. If you're designing for a particular audience, then yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of cultural differences. And some of them are very convoluted and maybe, you know, how can you like certain specific people? There's some countries have really strict, if a dignitary comes out, of how you have to light them and do you need to make sure that the exits are lit because security guys need that and that kind of stuff. And some of it is more simple. Some of it is very cultural. Like the best example I can give is in China, the color red is a color of luck. And the Western world, the color red symbolizes danger. So it would be weird for us in a Western world to see a show that's mostly red because we get tired, we're not used to it. But over there, it's culturally seen as in good taste, and they're very comfortable being in that environment. So if you are designing, I think, you know, turnkey for a specific culture, there is some aren't, but some definitely have some differences in what they like to see and not like to see. And some of them may even simpler as, you know, African American skin takes light, color light different than white skin. And that becomes a thing because you really don't want to light them in a way that does a disservice to them. But you have to take that in consideration. It's a reality of, you know, something that you have to think about.
I ask Iggy about what resources he taps into for learning cultural differences as he goes around to various cities and countries around the world, besides listening to my podcast, of course.
Only you. You're the only podcast I listen to.
Okay.
I don't really read a lot about travel. I do watch quite a few shows about travel, especially when it comes down to food, because I don't know if it's just me, but I'm an awful tourist because I'm so used to showing up in a place and going to work. And I've seen every you know, arena and parking lot and theater in the world, but I haven't seen a lot of the countries. And then on my day off, the last thing I want to do is come out of the hotel. So I'm an awful tourist. I wish I knew more about the country to have explored. A lot of it is exploring. And I think that a great advantage, especially in rock and roll, is we always work with local people. We always have local translators and promoters and producers and stage hands. So then there's always if you have time, they'll take you out. And I always want to be taken out to where they eat and where they go and see the stuff of it, because I think that's a much more interesting and honest depiction of a country than, you know, the theater show that you produce for a tourist.
I ask Iggy about how he thinks we should view cultural differences and ask him to tell us how his cultural orientation is unique growing up in Argentina.
People are doing, within certain reasons, isn't wrong. Like, it just, it's the way that it's their socially accepted norms versus our socially accepted norms. Argentina is, we're very warm. I mean, we're Latin American. So the first thing that I ran into when I moved here, which is very strange, but, and now it's kind of gone the opposite way, is that we kiss hello. We kiss hello between men. We kiss hello between women. It's just a peck on the cheek. But here, because you're leaning into kiss a girl hello, was like, what are you doing? You know, and now I go home and I shake people's hands and they look at me like, why are you shaking my hand? Like, I'm not your boss. You know, and they come and hug me and I feel awkward now because I've been here for so long. We speak with our hands. I think that comes from the Italian. I think I was talking to you about that earlier. We use our hands a lot to talk. We do eat dinner very late, but I've gotten used to eating dinner US times now, so I've cured myself of that. It's a problem when I go home. They're very effusive, you know, it's a very effusive culture. We live life largely. We hang out with friends a lot. I think there isn't a single band that hasn't gone to Argentina and gone that didn't say that they're the best audience in the world because they're very outgoing and they're very loud. And, you know, the culture is, I think, in everything we do and like in how we eat and you know, how we listen to music is very in your face. You know, we're very upfront and real and we don't tend to hide things. We tend to say things as they are, which I think that is a bit of like, I think sometimes subtlety will be a better answer for certain things, but they don't seem to do that over there, which is something that luckily I wish I was more upfront about stuff, but it's, yeah, they're definitely very straight shooting about stuff. They have no qualms about telling you what they feel, which is a good thing, I guess. I don't know.
I ask him about how Argentines view age and experience versus youth and enthusiasm.
Argentina a long time ago, so we do have there's at least one if not two generations that have come up after me, so I don't know if that's changed nowadays. I think that a lot of stuff that I was used to that I took as granted when I've gone back now, that's not like that anymore. What I remember was we respected our elders, but we didn't venerate them. So the elders weren't, you know, quote unquote, the elders. They were just the people that have been there before you and know more than you, and you respected them. And if you didn't, then you were an idiot. And if you disrespected them, you got a smack in the face. You know, but we respected the elders, but again, we didn't venerate them. There wasn't a need to. I don't think it was. We don't have a hierarchical escalation in that respect. We do in like positions in an office and kind of stuff, but not, I don't think necessarily with age. I think it was just a matter of respect.
I ask Iggy about how authority is viewed differently in Argentina from, let's say, how it might be viewed in the U.S. Is there a high difference between those in power and those at the lowest end of the scale?
You know, the boss is the boss, and he had his office, like the door you could close all the way, and then everyone else worked, and the boss was a sign of respect, and he was the guy that started the company, he paid for your salary, and there's a reason why he was where he was. I don't know if that's always necessarily the best approach to running a business. I think that we had bosses and not always leaders, and that was, you know, clearly it worked for us, but I think that leadership has, you know, the boss needs to participate a bit more in like what the workers are doing other than opening the door, yelling some orders and shutting the door. So, you know, we did definitely have a higher, stronger hierarchy. I don't think I necessarily agree with that being the best way to do it, at least not for me.
Iggy speaks multiple languages, of course. He's a native Spanish speaker, but he also speaks English and some other languages. So I asked him how important that is to him and how he uses it to his advantage.
Even if you show up in a country, like when I show up in Russia and I learn the 3-4 words, I learn, I don't know, yes, no, thank you, please, and stop, or something like up, down. You know, as you get along, you start learning, you ask questions, you point a lot. But I think just showing that you're trying to respect, you know, that you're trying to communicate is huge. I think that is a, you know, that's a big deal in of itself. Yeah, I'm sure I've butchered every Russian word I've ever tried to say. I mean, even in Japanese, I taught myself, so I'm sure, like, I think somebody once told me that I spoke like a robot. So, but at least you try and they appreciate it, you know.
Iggy has spent years designing and producing lighting for many of the world's most famous rock artists, and I wanted to know what he's learned from that experience and how does he incorporate that into his corporate work.
I'm still very involved in the music industry, and we're still very involved. I think most of the corporate events we produce always have this sort of theatrical rock and roll flair. And within us, there's different designers. I come from big rock and roll shows, so my designs are usually very rock and roll based. So I tend to pick, you know, very sort of monotone palettes, and I like shadows, and I like to be dramatic, and some other designers like it to be colorful and happy. And so we kind of strive to, we have a good balance of people. But doing the concert touring taught me a lot about dealing with situations, about being efficient, for one, because we have to be in rock and roll, about building an entire show in 4 hours instead of 3 days. And that anytime things can go absolutely pear-shaped and the truck didn't make it, the light isn't here, the skip, we're out of budget or whatever it is. So I think that that comes in handy. I think that that's something that sort of has melded in the corporate world, at least for me. I think I try to approach things that way.
I ask Iggy about his work with major artists and how much specific design direction do they give him, or do they normally give him a lot of flexibility in coming up with the various themes for the shows that he does?
Yeah, that depends on the artist. Some artists really want to know everything that happens, and they want, and it's their vision. Some guys are really vision driven and they have, you know, their vision for their album and what the songs mean, and they want to tie that into the show because they're trying to put out a message or an image of what they created. Some other bands, they don't. Some bands, Leopard, for example, is a band that knows that we are all working in their best benefit, and that we'll, you know, give them a big show and. In a specific budget, they seem to trust us more than they don't need to be controlling. They'll look at the shows. They look at every show after the show. With, you know, we'll record every show, and they'll comment if they don't like things and stuff like that. But they're not. We don't start a show with like, this is what it has to look like. We also, you know, they'll go and watch other shows and they'll come up with ideas and we try and incorporate them as we can. And again, some other artists, they need to know every single thing that happens. So that's something that changes, you know, from artist to artist.
I asked Iggy about what advice he might have for less experienced designers.
I said one thing that I believe, because I remember it happening in Argentina, which was, just because it can, it doesn't mean that it should. So just because your lights can change colors 100 times a second, it doesn't have to. Just because they can move, they don't have to move all the time. And it's sometimes it's a tool, and sometimes it's an effect, and sometimes it doesn't have to be both at the same time. So I think a lot of, new up-and-coming or non-professional designers, they think that they have to squeeze every inch of value out of the stuff. And what, you know, when you have too much stuff happening, too many colors at once, it just, you know, kind of mixes to brown. It doesn't really, you don't define anything. And a lot of it has to do also with just knowing color theory and knowing brightness. And we were having dinner with my girlfriend the other day, and this band started playing and all of her lights were green, and they looked sick. And I'm like, you know, it's like, and I get that you found that your lights can now be green, but it's really not a good color for human beings. You don't look good. So there's some simple stuff, and there's some stuff that maybe you get into more nuanced stuff, like, well, you know, if you're lighting for cameras, you should probably know how to light for cameras and not just think you have to throw a ton of lighting. There is, you know, some, as you go up the scale, there's always something that you don't know. I mean, even to this day, there's always something that I just go, oh, yeah, I should probably got that, but you know. I think it comes from the same place, right? I mean, it comes from a place that, you know, you have it, so you want to use it. And yeah, I mean, and I've been guilty of it as well. You know, when I started doing shows, like, shows were just, you know, smoke and, you know, look so cool. But I think the problem is you also have to realize that there's a point of balance, right, between seeing the beams and getting the finish and letting the projectors be seen. Because in the end, if you're putting smoke, you're actually putting something in front of a projector, for example. And also, you end up covering the artist. And I think that I think something that you need to learn and you need to realize is that unless you're doing a lighting show, you're actually lighting a show and you're lighting an artist or a product or an event or whatever it is, or a CEO. And it's not about, you know, this big environment ball of smoke thing you have going on. It's really about the people on stage. But yeah, the smoke thing is, I mean, I've done it. I think we all did in the beginning. We were all so cool. Like, this is great. Look at it. But yeah, it's too much. It's always too much. You know, hazers are really good. And there's been a thing that we were just talking about for another event, where now we have access to all these different kinds of smoke machines. And you have to start thinking about what they do. So if you have really sensitive smoke detectors, you know, you have stuff that could get, you know, dirty, then maybe you should go with a water-based hazer. If you want to do low fog, well, if you have actors on stage, you want to use dry ice low fog because it'll dissipate. But if you use something that's based on liquid, you're going to put this slippery liquid all over the stage and you end up, you know, breaking some dancers' legs. Like, now we've gotten to the point where, well, is smoke an effect? Is fog an effect? Or are we doing some haze? Or is it going to be what? You know, is the fire marshal going to come in halfway through a show and burst through the building because we set up all the fire alarms and stuff like that?
I asked Iggy about how he got interested in becoming a lighting designer in the very beginning.
I was in English school in Buenos Aires, and my school produced these big plays. Pretty above average plays for a school, especially a school in Argentina. We don't have the theater programs that you have in the U.S. So we were doing like Les Mis and Phantom when we were teenagers. There's a photo of me when I was probably like 5 or 6 years old where all the kids are looking forward and singing and I'm looking backwards because there was a smoke machine behind me and I was completely like, just, I thought this was the best thing in the universe, this box that came and put out smoke. So when I got to high school and I was able to be a part of the backstage crew, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to do special effects for movies. That was my thing. I wanted to do pyro and blow up cars and do robots. And we really don't have a movie industry that really supports that in Argentina. We make really good movies, but they're more dramatic and, you know, we don't have those budgets. So I ended up doing lighting and sound. I think they let me do pyro for a bit at school and I ended up blowing up a wall. So that was the end of the teenagers doing pyro. That was never happened again. And so there's a lot of history of me doing stuff like that. So I ended up doing lighting and sound. The school didn't have any equipment. Everything we had, we brought in. So I connected with those companies and I started doing shows outside of the school. And here we are. Never again went back.
I asked Iggy to tell us about his favorite place around the world and what's so appealing about it.
Let's go back to Japan. Bar none. I love Japan. I spent a lot of time there. I lived there for a year. I'll always go back to Japan. Yeah. I've seen a lot of it, and I think in the end, I've only seen like a tenth of it. There's a lot I haven't seen.
What's so appealing about it? I mean, I like it too, don't get me wrong, but what's so appealing to you?
There's something that I don't know who I told recently, that if you kidnap me and you put me like in a canvas bag, right, and tie off the top and you fly me to Japan and then you throw me in the middle of the street, like, and I manage to open the bag and I'll see a curb and I go, oh, I know that curb, that's in Japan. There's something about the country that is, for me, is instantly recognizable. It's such an ingenious place. It's incredibly tidy. The people have, you know, a very complicated, very long history with their pros and cons. I mean, I love Japan. I love the people. I love their history. I also realize that their history and the culture, the same things that I like about their culture are things that, you know, comes back to bite them. So their sense of honor is fantastic. And I love it. And I agree and I live by it. I think everybody should have honor. You know, I also think that there's a point where you have to, you know, put your hand up and go, hey, I need help. Like, you know, which is sometimes I think they get a bit too focused in their own world. I love their architecture. They have these, everything is small and their houses are cool and they're still buildings made out of wood. Or you'll be in a completely normal looking neighborhood and there'll be a Shinto shrine in the middle of it. It's a very interesting place with very interesting history and culture and rituals that I really appreciate. I think the other thing that I've come to see, and I'm gonna overgeneralize the country, is that they're very honest, at least in a one-to-one relationship. I don't know in business, but you know, I remember leaving a restaurant and forgetting one of the people in our party forgot their camera, and this little lady ran behind after us for like two blocks to give us a little digital camera back, and she didn't have to, you know, but. And it wasn't like she went outside and we were right there. She looked for us until she found it. And I really appreciate it. That's like a cool, it's a cool thing to have that you don't always see anymore.
I then asked Iggy what were the places that were the most difficult for him to work in around the world.
I did, many years ago, I did a show in Venezuela. And that was probably one of the hardest things because, you know, they were about to really collapse economically. The equipment wasn't great. I mean, which was understandable. Like they couldn't afford the greatest and latest technology. But it was tough to see the people. They were really suffering. A government that was just limiting their lives a lot, and it was hard because, like I said, we work a lot very closely with local people. There are translators and there are. Or, you know, they help us build the show. And we talk to them before we get there to advance the show. And it was tough. It was tough also because it's on the media side, it's frustrating that you're not getting what you want. They say they have it and they don't. But it was just tough to see them how, you know, this country that had all this oil and could be this amazing country was slowly descending into this sort of weird abyss, which is where they are now. And I hope they come out of it. There's other countries that are tougher because of language. Like I don't speak a word of Russian. So whenever you do shows in Russia, it gets hard, right? And there's only like four translators when there's 120 of us. So you kind of have to, we get very good at learning the four or five words that we need to learn.
I asked Iggy about what's happening these days in the mix between the traditional approach to architectural lighting and the experience economy.
Architectural lighting gets a heavy dose of the entertainment side of both technology and creative decisions. So being able to now do, I don't know, a building lobby, but now that has an interactive video element to it, or putting entertainment lighting up in, you know, the atrium of an airport, and having this bit of visual eye candy to architecture that goes beyond very elegantly designed lighting, which I think it is. I think a lot of the architecture stuff is unbelievably elegant. And a lot of it, especially a lot of the bigger spaces, can end up being a bit clinical and a bit, you know, sterile. And I think that things have gotten easy enough now that we can sort of cross-pollinate each other's, you know, work. And I think that's where the architecture came in, where now LED screens can live inside of lobbies, or, you know, we can create content for them, or they can put media servers in, or whatever it is. And I think on the other side, which I think I talked about, is that we've come to a point where we can do architectural style designs on stage. So we can play with different tones of white light, and we can play with volumes on stage, and it's not just these layers. Like I said, we're like, this is where the band is, and this is where the video screen is, and this is where the lighting is, and these two things at the side is where the sound is, and those are your planes. Instead, now we can sort of start melding things back and forth, and you know, video can meld into lighting, and so on and so forth.
I asked Iggy about what advice he might have for others working in the experience economy in various cultures around the world.
That I've told, and I tell this to, well, back when I was a crew chief, I used to tell this to my crew, but I think it's very, very, still to this age, still to everyone, it's very valuable. I think people have this idea that we have a job where we get to be creative, and that's it. That's all we want to do. We want to be creative. We want to put lights up. We want to put sound up and video and colors. And you know, the reality that it's called show business for a reason, it's still a business. And this, looking at stuff like, everybody in this world has to be solvent. We all need to make money. We all live in a world where we need to pay our bills. We just happen to have the liberty of having a job that lets us be creative while also, you know, making money and covering ourselves. And acknowledging that in terms of egos and pushbacks and I think that's an important thing. I think it's important to realize that no matter what we do, we're still, it works. Things work better, and everybody makes more money if we all work together. And we realize that we're all working to the same goal, which is having an end client, whoever the end client is, be happy and not look at the bill at the end and go, "This is insane. You guys are never doing this again." It's a business. We still have to, we don't have to push the liberties to the extreme, because that's when stuff happens. It shouldn't happen.
Iggy, thanks very much for spending the day with us here at Exhibit Concepts in Ohio and for appearing on the Global Exhibitor podcast. As I like to often remind people, all business is conducted within the context of culture. If you like this podcast, please tell others about it, subscribe to it, and rate it as well. We really appreciate the feedback. And finally, if you or someone you know would make a good guest on this podcast, please tell me about it. I'd like to know. You can send me an email at jeff@globalexhibitor.com. That's jeff@globalexhibitor.com. And please check out our website and blog at globalexhibitor.com. Thank you.